Hello, Marquette basketball fans. Welcome to another edition of the Golden Break. I'm your host, Adam Woke. Shout out to the production team, Dr. Michael Keegan, Mr. Matthew Mikus, and Jeffrey Gibellina. This show does not go without their help and support. Today, we got a good one for you. Today, I co-host the show with Ben Steele. We mixed the format up a little bit. And it was awesome. We went for almost an hour. I think we got some golden content for you. How about that? I knew you guys would like that one. But let's kick it over to Ben. All right. We are joined here today by the one and only Ben Steele. Ben, how we doing, man?
What's going on? It's good to be back. We're back, baby.
I know. It feels good to have you back on the pod. It wouldn't be a Golden Break podcast season if we didn't get you on here, man. You've been the only one, I think, that's been there from the beginning, too. So we all... And I think with that being said, listen, I want to start the show today talking a little bit about what's going on at the Sentinel. You know, I've seen and read a little bit about what's happening. But for those who may not know what's going on with your newspaper, why don't you give them just a little bit of background? And if you could tell people out there what they can do to support not just your work, right? We love you, man. You know the love that came out on Twitter when we heard about what was going on. But, there's a lot of great writers, right? And I think a paper like that in the city is important for us to get behind.
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret the struggles of the media industry overall, but newspapers in particular over the last couple of decades, basically my whole career. This is like I'm almost 20 years now deep into the newspaper game. Hard to believe, but yeah, my whole career there's been cuts and cutbacks and too many goodbye parties for really good journalists that I've been to over the last decade. But yeah, man, we're in a fight for survival. And obviously, I'm biased, but I really believe that a well-informed public by a newspaper is really crucial to a well-functioning society, really. Forget about what I do, you know, covering games and stuff, and we could talk about all that stuff, and that's fun, and it's good. People enjoy that stuff, but I'm talking about, like, real life and death, important situations that we cover in the city. Just look at the Journal Sentinel's history, just in recent years, even despite all this, the financial struggles that we've gone through, we won Pulitzer Prizes for uncovering pension scandals with, following the money of where taxpayers' monies are going and how the government's using that. We won a Pulitzer for a pension scandal where people in Milwaukee were lining their pockets with taxpayer money that probably would still be going on if we hadn't exposed that. We've done stories about, you know, really bad landlords in the city that aren't getting their electricity up to code, really putting people in life and death situations. So those are the kind of stories that we do that are really important, much more important than the stuff that I cover. Just like I said, like a well-informed public is a good thing. I don't think anybody can argue that. You could see just the spread of misinformation over the last 5 or 7 years. And that directly coincides with, I think, with the downsizing of newspapers and the media literacy of our society. And then, I mean, obviously I'm biased. I love my job. I love what I do. And I think for this specific audience, for the Golden Eagles audience, I think for what we do, we really like shine a light on like the human element of the players. You know, they're not just numbers on KenPom. You know, the stories I do, what I like to do, I like to dig into people's backgrounds, where they come from, what's their motivation, how they learn their craft. And, you know, you can tie all that stuff into the numbers and everything, but I really think you get a much more sense of the person and who they are and who the coaching staff is and all that when you get more in-depth stories like what we try to do. So what people could do, if I get off my soapbox here, is just, you know, just subscribe to the Journal Sentinel, man. That's basically all you got to do. There's always dirt cheap offers. That's how they try to get you in the door. I know it increases later, but you know, that all that money goes to support that important work that we do. So I appreciate you. Let me spiel for a little bit, but yeah.
No, I'm happy to do it. Everything you said, I completely agree with. And I just want to second to the Golden Break Mafia out there. Listen, open up your goddamn pocketbooks and get a subscription. Listen, I think everything that Ben said is really important out there, especially considering the things that they open up locally. It's someone who's got your back. They're not just informing you, but they're also making sure that they're keeping things on the up and up. So stop being lazy. Subscribe right away. Okay. No waiting. The time is now. All right. So let's transition here. You know, Ben, I've been really impressed. And just so for the audience knows today, this is going to be a little bit more of a co-host today. We're going to move a little away from the Q&A. Ben and I are going to run this.
We're free flowing here.
We're free flowing. I want more co-hosts on with me. I like the Q&As, don't get me wrong, but I also like to talk, as people have learned to know about me. And so, you know, with that said, these last couple games, I haven't been on since I think the Notre Dame game, after the Notre Dame game. And I was at the Creighton game where I got to run into Ben. By the way, you looked good in the jacket, man, out there with the sport coat.
The Blazer game is strong.
Yes, it looked good out there, man. It looked good. And so let's start with the Creighton game, because of the thing that really jumped out at me and about this team's offense in general is I feel like we have far more flexibility to attack a defense's weakness, and to see the way that we just, I can't remember that backup center's name for Creighton, but I mean, literally the offense was Freddie King.
Freddie King.
I mean, it was like basically Oso.
Yeah.
And to see them do that, like, I think actually impresses them. Even if we talk about the Providence game, what I loved about the first half in juxtaposition to the second half is in the first half of the game, everyone was playing a five-man tag. So for our viewers out there, that, you know, basically everybody is up on their guy off the ball, which exposes the hoop. And listening to the announcers on TV, we had the CBS. I don't know who those guys are, but it was bad. And they're like, well, I wonder what Marquette saw on the film, because they just keep seeming to go to the basket. And I think it's not about what they see on the film. It's what they see on the court, because this team is going to take what the defense gives them. And in the first half, it was ball at the hoop, ball at the hoop. Yeah. And then second half of that game, you could see that Providence adjusted and the help line got tighter and we started kicking it out.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what you think, but there's a big difference in the offense last year to this year.
Absolutely, man. I think the biggest number for this team that's most impressive is that their 2-point percentage number, right? It's like, I got it up right here. It was 61% the last time I looked, so I assume it's around the same thing.
Yeah, we're at 60.2 right
60.
Now.
60.2%. Yeah, that's a top five mark in KenPom, and that's You know, they're pretty average 3-point shooting team, but what this team really does is really attack the paint, and all five players could do it. Yeah, you mentioned Oso. In that Creighton game, that was probably his most aggressive game, just going one-on-one. He had the quickness advantage, which he has against a lot of centers that he'll face. And he can handle the ball really well, as everyone listening knows. So he can really take advantage of that. And yeah, it's much different than last year where, you know, with Justin and Daryl, the ball was in those guys' hands a lot. And they played a kind of a different pace than a lot of the other players. You know, like Daryl liked to get in the mid-range and Justin kind of like to back down a little bit and survey, but this team, man, the ball is really hopping around. And this is the way that I think Shaka envisions the program playing throughout his time as head coach here. I think that this is what he really wants. And you're seeing how it works. Like you spread out the athletes, you get the matchups that you like and you just attack. And when it's humming, man, it's fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, just to kind of talk about the differences from last year. I don't have the numbers from last year, but just looking at where the shots are coming from. I mean, we've had over 400 shots from three. We've had 316 attempts from 2 feet from the hoop, 118 from in the key, and only 41 attempts from the mid range. Yeah. There's no way those numbers look like that last year with Lewis.
Yeah. Yeah. Daryl probably had 40 shots in a game at the mid range that time.
Yeah, well, and it's actually something I wanted to, you know, I don't know. I've been a little all over the place, I think, with Tyler's game in particular when I'm talking about some of the shots that he's taken, because I'm really glad in the Providence game that that film will be out there about what he did at the hoop, because I think if you look previous to that, he still continues to struggle at the basket. But there's part of me that wants him to develop maybe a little bit of a pull-up just from time to time, because he tends to, when he says in my head, I'm going to score, he's going to the hoop, and he doesn't do it often. He's obviously a pass first guy. I don't want that to come off as him not being. I don't know what you learned about Tyler in the offseason. One of the things that I made an assumption about last time on the last pod was that I felt like, because I've always wanted to see his game at the hoop get a little bit better. And why it did a little bit, it seems like his 3-point shooter bigger jumps this year from last year. Did you talk to him at all or get any sense about where he put a lot of his time and energy when it came to his game in the offseason?
Yeah, I did a story. You can look it up on the Journal Sentinel, just about how he tweaked his shooting mechanics. Like his offhand is right, you know, he's left-handed. So his offhand, his right hand was kind of off to the side a little bit, and it kind of got like a little corkscrew motion.
Stevie when Mitchell. I call that the Stevie Mitchell. Yeah, he's got that little hiccup in his too.
Yeah, so Tyler really worked on finishing that. But when they first tweaked the mechanics, they didn't want him shooting outside of 15 feet just because, you know, you got to put more, you know, put more leg. You know, you think about it more when you're shooting that far out. So they wanted him to start out close to the basket. So he really worked on finishing around the basket and doing all that stuff in the off season. Cause he knows, I mean, you saw against Providence, like people just go under the screens against him. They don't want to, you know, they go over the screen and he's going downhill. Then he's got all the passing lanes available to him. So if he's attacking the basket like that, and he's finishing like he did against Providence, man, that just opens everything up and the defense has to, you know, switch things around a little bit. But yeah, I think what you're saying about, I haven't really thought about that before, about maybe developing a little floater game, you know, in the paint a little bit. That would be just that in-between game that because sometimes he does get caught a little too deep under the basket sometimes. So if he had that floater game, that might help out things a lot.
No, that's a good point. He does get caught deep by the basket sometimes. There's times too where it's like he's under the backboard and you're like, how the hell did you get under there? But I mean, he'll make a great pass out of there. And I think his turnovers have slightly ticked down this year, but he still has his games where actually I'm interested to see what you think about this and maybe like what you've seen being around the team a little bit. Like from talking to Tyler a little bit, it's very apparent that he is an ultra competitive guy. And to me, sometimes I feel like he gets like almost frustrated, too frustrated. He's just so emotional. Mm-hmm. And he gets so frustrated. He just starts forcing things. And that's when I would say like, what was it? The overtime against Providence where like he may have had like 4 or 5 possessions in a row. He had a great game, but I think it was that first overtime where it was just like turnover, bad shot. Just like you could tell he was almost trying so hard to will them to do it. I mean, listen, he did also then at the end of that first overtime, then actually score some points and come in and made some great steals and efforts on defense. But like, what do you catch that vibe that like sometimes that like that competitive drive maybe getting the best of him from time to time?
Yeah, especially in the game at Providence, you know, being from Rhode Island, playing in front of so many people and, you know, the crowds on him. And you know, Tyler likes to play to the crowd a little bit. So his emotions were definitely like ratcheted up to the highest levels in that game. Yeah. And I think that was his highest turnover game of the season too. I think he had six or seven in that game. Especially when Marquette struggled down the stretch of regulation, which I'm sure we can break down here. That was, you know, the game was at hand, you know, they were up 9, with 7 minutes left, and Tyler had a couple of really uncharacteristic turnovers. Like usually his turnovers are kind of being too aggressive, but down the stretch, I think he had one where the ball just slipped out of his hands when he was catching a pass, and then one where he kind of left his feet to pass and didn't have anywhere to go and landed. So yeah, man, that's definitely an area of concern. But what'd you think of what happened in the offense down the stretch?
You know,
With this, for me, actually, I mean, down the stretch, you're going to have Providence is going to ratchet up their defense down the stretch. Yeah. There's no Ed Cooley team that's going to play like they did in the first half of that game. I think defensively, we really just took such advantage of them. And I think there was a clear step up in energy from Providence in the second half where we saw, I think, actually probably a more accurate version of who they are. To me, actually, was less about what happened to the offense down the stretch and much more about what happened in the first 12 minutes of that game, because we were dead. I mean, the defense that we played, that was probably the worst stretch of defense I feel like I've seen from us all year. And you can't win in the Big East having that long of a stretch, not playing that strong a defense. I mean, there was a point multiple times like where I would see like Stevie Mitchell just getting destroyed off the ball. And he's one of our better on the ball defenders, like guys not jumping into gaps, nobody helping. Not, you know, we're usually our rotations. I love our defensive rotations, the way we sprint or the way we'll even go to the and one passer that we'll get out there and we'll get. But I saw a very angry Shaka in that game in that first 12 minutes. I mean, he makes that face sometimes. He's like, come on, man. Like you could tell he's trying to ratchet down his own anger sometimes because he wants to, you know, obviously you want to get on guys, don't get me wrong, but you can tell him he was getting really frustrated. So I think by the time really in the second half of that game where we started to blow the lead was really just us starting to grind it out with them. I just think you can't do that in the beginning of a game.
Yeah, you can't dig yourself in that big of a hole. Yeah, and yeah, it was like Jared Bynum. I know he's a really super quick guy, but he was toasting guys off the dribble. And Bryce Hopkins, man, that guy is. I had never seen that guy in person before, but that guy is put together, man. That guy is a baller. You could see why he was recruited to Kentucky, but and that's the kind of guy that probably gives Marquette a little problems just with his size and his physical ability. And he was just like putting his head down and just getting to the basket. So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, before we talk about size, he had no fouls. Really? Really? Yeah. No fouls. Like, listen, I will never say that the refs, I just, even if maybe that is the truth, I just never feel comfortable. I think you can always find something in what you did as a team to lose a game. You should always be able to overcome a bad rep, but dude, zero fouls.
I know. Yeah. I'm not a blame the ref guy either. I've never been that way. That maybe I'm turning a blind eye to certain things, but like you said, like there's always something you can point to for improving your own performance. But still though, minus 30 and free throw differential, that's a number that I honestly, I don't think I've ever seen one that big before that I can think of off the top of my head. So there's something there. And I'm sure, like, you know, I've get emails from Marquette fans saying like refs intentionally screws Marquette every time, you know, fans can be reactionary sometimes, but it's more just, I think, just refs are human, you know, the crowd, they get influenced by the home crowd just a little bit. I, you know, studies have shown this sort of thing. It's more so that, but to have it be this, the disparity be that large is certainly something crazy that,
And it's not like we've, you know, it's one thing if like we've seen Marquette out fouling, you know, just fouling people like crazy all year. Yeah. We haven't seen that. So like that makes it stand out a little even more as an anomaly. But again, I don't want to spend too much time, but I want to go back to what we talked about, Biggs. You said one of the weaknesses, and this is actually one of my really big concerns about Marquette's ability to compete, especially when we get into February and March and we get up. I mean, I think we got UConn next week, right? Like I am worried about the depth of size on this team.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I like some of the things that Ben Gold can bring to the table, but he's a stretch five.
Yeah.
And to not have someone to be able to come in and bang when Oso is sitting. And I'm actually really surprised that teams are not going to try to get Oso into more foul trouble early on in games at this point, because if you can get him out of that game, it really changes their ability to rebound. As you start to like look around the league a little bit, like how heavy of a concern is that for you?
Yeah, it's, you mentioned UConn, they play them, I think the 11th of January. So that's another team, man, with just Sanogo and the 7-2 freshman clinging. And that's going to be a matchup nightmare for Marquette. Yeah, Oso's probably, you know, Tyler's the guy that stirs the drink in a lot of ways, but Oso's probably the most indispensable player, because without him on the court, especially in these Big East games, like the drop off is significant. I think Ben Gold, I think he only played 5 minutes against Providence. He came in the first half. He missed like a layup on a baseline out of bounds play that was pretty, you know, I think he shot it with his left hand, but and then he got hung up on a screen. And I think that's when they took him out of a game. I don't remember if it was Hopkins or it might have been Ed Croswell. Ben Gold got hung up on a screen and Croswell got a dunk pretty easily. And I think they gave him the hook after that and he never got back in. And Oso played like 45 minutes. And that's another thing, like when you want execution down the stretch, and you know, if Oso is playing 45 minutes, you know, it's not going to be the best at the end of the game.
And you could get away with like running a small five out there against some teams. You can't get away with that with the Providences of the world and the UConns of the world, right? You can't play Omax at your five and get away with that against this team, because like you said, Croswell and what's his name? I mean, those guys are just going to push you around. And Gold is obviously – Gold actually – not that their games is that their bodies are the same. That it reminds me of Oso when he was young. I mean, Oso's obviously, I can only imagine how many pounds he's put on over the last 3 years. He's learned to be more physical. He's had time, 1,000 burritos and work out all the time. You know what I mean? Like Ben Gold is obviously his ability to play physically is almost non-existent. His game is almost all graceful. You know what I mean? Which is great. Listen, the guy's got great ball skills. I love the way he's going to be able to stretch the floor over time. Mm-hmm. But well, you said he played 5 minutes. I mean, like, what's going to happen? You know, freshmen get a lot of playing time now in the year, right? And maybe this is actually a good time to transition, because this was one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today is, you know, the freshmen are going to get a lot of time early on in the season. You got to find out what you have, right? You got to know what these guys are going to look like so that Shaka knows how to use them later on. And I feel like over the last week, we've definitely seen a dip in the freshmen. I feel like they've hit a little bit of a plateau with Gold and Jones and Ross. And I think actually that's the X factor of this team is those three. Like, we need two of those guys at least to be able to step in and play real minutes, because I don't believe – listen, I right now am not a believer at all that Joplin's going to figure out how to play defense. Like, I have seen just no progress on that end of the ball. My good rebounder, but like – I think he might be who he is. And you know, Shaka would disagree with me. He should, all the coaches should, and all those guys, they want to squeeze more out of that. But what are you seeing from these freshmen? I mean, there's some impressive things, don't get me wrong. And I've talked about those things the last pod. I gushed about the things that I really do like. But since that, I've really started to see them to struggle in some of these big games.
Yeah. Chase Ross had some good minutes against Providence, and he's the most physically advanced. So he's got the body, so he can hang in these Big East games. But I think especially you saw last game, a Big East road game against a very physical team. Like, I think that opened the eyes of Sean Jones and Ben Gold. They're like, wow, like this is a completely different kind of game than, you know, playing against Northern Illinois, you know, in some bye game in early December, late November. You know, it's a whole different thing. And They seem like they weren't quite ready for that ratcheting up of competition. Like, Sean Jones missed a couple box outs on free throws, you know, led to offensive rebounds and a couple putbacks. And I think he got the hook after that until the end when Shaka put him in off the bench after 20 minutes for the last play of regulation.
Do you know what's funny about that? I agreed with that. I agreed with that.
I liked it too, because he's the fastest guy on the team. There's 4 seconds. You got to go full court. Like, he got a good look at shot. He might have been actually, I haven't broken down, like, I haven't looked at the clock when he shot the ball. I should go back. It felt like maybe he could have gotten maybe half a step or one step closer, but still he had a good look at the basket. So I had no problems with that play.
No, and actually, it's funny that you bring it up, because in the last show, I talked about the last play against Wisconsin, because the people were kind of dogging Shaka for that. When I thought, you know, one, my defense at the time was that you only have so much practice time, right? And those plays are the ones that are probably like the last thing you're going to do on your practice list, because there's just so many things to focus in on. And those are going to get better. But at the time, what I had said, because we were running cam across the half court line, and we have usually you run like a safety valve. And what do is, like, you know, what I thought we should do is run off Shawn Jones as your safety valve, because he's your fastest guy who can get the ball up the court in 3 seconds if you can't advance it up halfway. Right. And Shaka did that at this game. He did exactly that, which I think is that's a good knowing of your personnel. It's going to be the best shot that you're probably going to get, but when you have to inbound full court like that with that much time on the clock. So I agreed with you. I thought it was the right shot, but it's also really hard. I think you bring up a point that I did not think about, but, like, it's really hard to bring a guy off the bench for 20 minutes.
Coming in cold, not sweating at all, just like throwing it. That's a tough position to put in, but like I said, man, he got a good look at it.
He did. And you know, playing on the road for these guys, you know, playing at the Dunk, they've had Mackey Arena, you know, they've played in some, like, legit road games where they definitely have struggled. Like, I thought the front and that's actually, I think we should probably expect that for the most part. Those are really one awesome places to play, but super intimidating places to play. And those guys are going to have to make that turn at some point. I agree with you completely. I think Ross is the most advanced physically, and he is going to, I feel comfortable with him defending anybody on the court at any time. His ability to jump gaps, I mean, the dude plays a safety position like nobody else, athletic. You know what I mean? Right. He's so athletic. Offensively, you know, there's some stuff to be desired. He can dunk.
We know that for sure.
He can run in trans really well. I think he's really good at that. But, you know, he's still finding himself offensively in a way that I think, like, for example, I think Shawn Jones has a lot of just innate natural talent on the offensive side. He's a much more willing passer than I thought his game originally was going to lend itself to. But he's learning very quickly how to play within the offense, because also two shotguns going to hook your ass the second that you don't make it. What do you think? Between Gold, Ross, Shawn Jones, who has the best Marquette career?
I would say probably Chase Ross, just with that physical ability. I could see him becoming like a Big East Defensive Player of the Year type of guy. He has that kind of ability and disruptive ability. Kind of, I'm not going to compare it to like Jimmy Butler or anything, but he's in that mold. You know, he's got the same kind of switchability, but he's got that defensive dog in him too. So it's I could see him probably having the best career. Maybe if it he's a little small for the NBA. I think they list him at like 6'4", I think. So he's a little small, but he definitely has the athletic skills for sure.
His wingspan has to be pretty damn impressive. I don't know what it would be compared to others, but just kind of, you know, eye testing it and seeing what's out there. Like, I really love the way that he's able to shut down like entry passes. That's something I actually think this team is good at in general, is just denying the ball into the post, which is huge against, like, I thought the first half, I talked about this, I think in the last pub, that even in the first half of that game against Purdue, you know, we did a great job on Edie. We had great backside help. We had great job fronting in the post, and we did a great job of denying the entry pass. Now, I think against Creighton, we struggled a little bit more against that, but I think actually Creighton just has a better, like, offensive system. They were, you know, that team runs at Purdue is really still running through Edie. And so I think it makes it a little easier to kind of defend that, you know, but in the end, obviously we just couldn't keep up. I want to ask you about Omax. So, I love Omax to death. I think he's fantastic. And what he's doing offensively, especially the way he's attacking closeouts. I think that's the thing. And his lack of hesitancy to attack a closeout. You know what I mean? I feel like he gets that ball, and sometimes he's running to the pass as the guy is closing out, which I'm loving that viciousness in which he's going at it. And he's like, I wouldn't have guessed this. I don't know if I just, like, you know, sometimes you don't compute all of the things and then you see a stat and you're like, oh, really? But he's like top 10 in the country and once.
Yeah, I saw that today too. That's really interesting. Yeah.
I just didn't see that coming. But what I want to ask is actually about his 3-point shooting. And I want to ask you the way that you think Shaka might coach. Maybe we could use maybe Omax as a litmus test for, I think, a lot of guys on these teams, depending on how shooting might be going. But, you know, I think he's around a 33% shooter. He's very streaky, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think there's the games where he just misses everything from the arc, and games where he's going to hit a couple. And his ability to keep people honest out there is going to be as important as TK's ability to finish at the hoop, right? Like, these are the things that make it hard for a team to defend. But I think as of late, Omax, I haven't been super impressed with the way the shot looks. Do you think that there will be a point in this under Shaka that he might give some guys a red light after a while? Or do you think that in order for this team to succeed, they kind of actually have to function in a world where we're just going to have to take the best shot that's given to us?
Yeah, I don't think the red light exists in Shaka's world. I think he likes to give guys a lot of freedom and the confidence to read the game as they see fit when they're on the court. It's interesting with Omax. I think if he makes his first three-pointer, I think he kind of settles into taking more jump shots after that, and he can fall into that trap a little bit. But, you know, like you said, he's at his best when he's attacking the paint and attacking closeouts and getting in there, getting those and ones, like you mentioned. He really, you know, a couple of times last season, it just looked like he was just careening out of control at times, like his feet would get tangled. And this still happens several times. Like he'll shuffle his feet when he gets in the lane. Or
one of the guys on the production team used to call him a baby deer, which it very much felt like, because it seemed like almost last year he was trying to find his feet. And it's very different. I think what you're saying about his feet is super important.
Yeah, they actually worked on that a lot in the offseason. That was his biggest thing that he was working on. He was working on that with DeAndre Haynes, the assistant coach. They're working on his balance and, you know, getting to 2 feet in the lane and just, you know, finishing that way. And you can see the work's paying off, even though sometimes his brain still goes a little too fast and he gets those happy feet, which actually helps him out on the defensive end a lot, because you see how active he is at the front of the press, and he's kind of out of control in a good way on defense, you know, but he's got to learn to play a little more under control on the offensive end. His 3-point shot, like his form, it sometimes looks great, man. It looks good. He's got good rotation on the ball. So I think the potential for that number to go up, that percentage to go up, it's there. Like there's room to grow for sure. Just as long as he doesn't just fall into that trap of just settling for that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. But that nugget, I think, is important at what they did in the offseason on his feet, because that's the stuff that I want to hear when I'm assessing the long-term value of our coaching staff, right? Mm-hmm. And not only them, but the guys that go and recruit. So not only just how they develop players, but going out and getting guys. Every guy, not every player that gets recruited is up for the development. That's going to be up to them, you know. And I've heard Shaka say before, you know, when players ask me how I'm going to get better, he tells them that, well, that's up to you. He goes, I know what to do. It's are you going to commit yourself? Like it's not about questioning me. It's about questioning you. And I know, Max, you have a very willing learner, which, you know, then I think it's even more correct what you're saying about what Shaka might be saying about not really giving these guys a red light, because let's see where Omax can go. We've seen some really great growth. We've seen some development, and that's going to happen in season just as that's going to happen out of season. And so where Omax might end up, I think, is just as important on where he is now, because the reality is you're going to win with him or, you know what I mean? Like, that's not like, it's not like if you take the ball out of his hands and we start narrowing down what this offense can do, we're not going to win. Right. So we either have to hope the players get there, or that's just going to be who this team is.
Yeah. And he's, you know, the biggest thing about this team is, and you touched on this a little bit, playing at Purdue, playing at Providence, like, you can't simulate those kind of situations in practice. And these guys, the only way you can learn is by going through it. And, you know, Omax is in a bigger, much bigger role than he was last season. Oso is in a much bigger role. The only guy, and Chuck has talked about this before, is that, you know, the only guy who played a huge role last season and doing it again this season is Tyler. You know, all the other guys, Cam, Stevie, you know, drop off the bench, all these guys are going through this for the first time. And, you know, they're human beings. Like, you know, your heart's racing when the crowd of Providence with their, you know, Rhode Island accents are yelling all kind of crazy stuff at you on the court. And, you know, you're a human being, you get wrapped up in that stuff. And I think you saw that at the end of the game sometimes, that they were trying to get that focus back. And the only way to do it, the only way to learn from it is going through it. So maybe this two double overtime losses actually end up being a good thing, you know, further down the line this season and that player development that we're talking about.
Character building, right? All right, so I watch, and I actually like look forward to it. I love watching pressers with Shaka, especially, and you don't have to say this because I'll just say this because, and I said this before, but Woj pressers used to be so depressing and terrible. This has to be so much, you get so much more content, I'd imagine. Like, it has to be so much more fun, those post-game conferences with him. But anyways, one of the things I like about what he says, and I want to know what you think a little bit about his relationship with Cam and Joplin, because it's very apparent in the pressers. Like, he says, I get mad at them. Like, I get upset with them. And oh my God, I mean, Joplin makes me so angry at times as a fan. Like, you know, when I say angry as a fan, Joplin, if you're listening, I'm sure you're not. I don't mean it in any way, because I'm sure you're getting it from your coaches when you get off. And some of the things you do on defense are just mind-boggling. And to Cam, it's like the shot selection, right? You could definitely see, I've seen an evolution from the start of the season to where we are now. He's obviously attacking the hoop a lot more, but he's still, listen, he's still taking some of those threes sometimes. And so I love the way Shaka says, like, I get on them. I get mad at them. I get upset. There's a balance as a coach you have to strike, right? To push someone, but to also like push them in a way that says like, this is for your betterment. Like, I'm not here just to be an ass, to be an ass. What do you glean from that relationship that Shaka has with those two guys in general?
Yeah, he definitely pushes those guys hard. You can see it. When he takes those guys off the court, sometimes you can read his lips. Sometimes, you know, can I curse on this podcast?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Say what? Yes, bring it on.
I can't curse in the newspaper, so I'll do it here. Like, you can see when sometimes he pulls Cam off, and you can see him say, you know, that was a bullshit shot that you just took. I can actually read his lips. So I think that's a pretty common occurrence. Both those guys, Cam and Jaw, pretty headstrong and they're super confident in their skills. That's how they got to where they are now. So Shaka definitely pushes those guys really hard, and he's on them constantly. And I think as much as Shaka is a relationship guy, he knows the right amount. You know, he's been a head coach a long time, and he knows he's coached a lot of different kind of personalities. So he knows how far he can push that, you know, and he's not like the typical overbearing college basketball coach who just, you know, thrives on yelling all the time. He's a different kind. He's not a yeller and a screamer and a tyrant type of guy. He's more of a, you know, point out the flaws that you've mentioned, point out in a very strong and pointed manner. It's really interesting to watch that. But yes, to your first point, Shaka Smart press conferences much better than he's an amazing talker. Sometimes he'll give like expansive answers, and like he'll bring up stuff that you didn't even ask about, and you're like, oh yeah, well that's file that away for a future story. So it's always good. I always appreciate that about him.
It was funny after the Purdue game, like at the end, he's like, no one's going to ask me about Purdue, like, or about their program. And it's just like, when it is only about how much he loves Matt Painter and that program, which I, you know, so I actually just saw a clip the other day, and I said that to the production team of Matt Painter talking about recruiting. Oh. And it stood out to me because I feel like it's actually something that Shaka has now learned come to Marquette. Like, I think he had to learn this the hard way in Texas, that he's like, and Painter talked about, he goes, listen, I five-star guys, like I get it. Like I see that. He goes, but you know, I see four-star guys and three-star guys. And sometimes I see there's not a big difference. Like, yeah, they need some stuff that needs to be worked on, but like, that's what I want to do as a coach. And he talked about really like, especially what that meant locally and getting guys within his own state or guys that are in bordering states, and putting the time and energy into those is just as important. And I feel like Shaka is definitely learned that lesson. I mean, he had plenty of fives that came through Texas. And I think he got, I don't know. I mean, I didn't watch like oodles of Texas tape, but I watched enough, and I watched enough games to know that he did not run an offense like this. He definitely ran it through the five-star guys. And I think he's evolved to the point where he does a really good job, I think, of understanding what his guys can and can't do and getting them into those spots to succeed. I mean, I talked earlier about this offense's ability to be flexible depending on a defense's weakness. Like that's awesome. Like, that's the type of program I think that is going to make you become, I think, one of the teams that people fear in the Big East. Is that a sense you're getting? Like, what is, especially for as long as you've been doing this, right? You've seen a lot of different locker rooms, you know, you've Is that something that could stand out to you? Like, what are the things that stand out in a Shaka regime so far now that we're in year two? And I think now more than ever, we could say that this is really a Shaka team. Like, this is, I think, truly a Shaka vision, where last year it was like, you know, he still had holdovers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could see he's putting everything into program development, getting guys better year over year, and having those guys, the upper trajectory. And then, like, next year, the year after, just having that continual thing instead of having to retool 5 stars every year, getting a new one, getting another one after that. And especially with Shaka, the way he likes to play with the press and you know, the way they're playing on offense now, just that egalitarian sharing the ball, all that requires a lot of time and a lot of time together and communication on the defensive end. That's just stuff that just comes with reps. And when you have one and done players like he did at Texas, you just can't build that. So that's why he wasn't doing a lot of pressing when he was at Texas. It was a whole different style. And this is definitely, I mean, that's his brand, you know, since he's been a head coach, is playing that style. So this is definitely a throwback to that earlier VCU era Shaka Smart with a lot of unheralded recruits that he's kind of built up and taught the way that he likes to play. And you see that in the recruiting class that's coming in next year. You know, these are guys that aren't ready to, they're kind of under the radar guys, but they got those athletic skills that kind of fit the way that he wants to play. And, you know, they'll be like Chase Ross this year, you know, getting like 20 minutes, showing what he can do, getting his feet wet, building him up during the season. And then the next year after that, he's ready for a bigger role, like the sophomores are this year, like, you know, Cam and Stevie and Joplin are playing significantly more than they did last year. And then they'll do that next year. And it's more of the way college basketball used to be. Now we'll see how successful that is, because obviously the landscape's changed a lot in college basketball. You can't really bet on the future a lot because things change so fast, but it's definitely interesting. And it's totally different philosophy than he did at Texas. Because, you know, obviously he didn't win an NCAA tournament game at Texas, despite all those NBA level talents, you know, like the Greg Brown and Jackson Hayes and how many NBA guys, Mo Bamba and all those guys he had at Texas. He never won an NCAA tournament game there. So I think he's kind of figured out what he's good at. And of course, you know, if there's a 5-star available, of course you're going to take him that wants to come, you know, so you're not going to turn him down. But I think he prefers more playing this way that he's doing at Marquette.
Something you said that I think is really important, especially in looking at the landscape of college basketball today, the coming and going of players through the portal, and there's more fluidity among teams than there usually is. And what he is doing is trying to go up against that, which to me means the most important thing that he can do is the relationships he's going to build, because those are the things that are going to keep those guys there, right? Those guys feeling like they belong, feeling like they're part of the team, a culture that they want to be in. And, you know, going back to what you said 10 minutes ago is about that actually something you've really been impressed by or that you've seen a lot of, that makes me really happy. And so that brings me to my next question, is the bench coaches. What have you seen out of these guys that is different from regimes in the past?
Kind of staffs kind of break down usually in similar ways. Like Neil Barry on the staff, Neil Barry is kind of the big guys coach. DeAndre Haynes does the guards more, because he was a really good guard when he was at Kent State. And Cody Hatt's kind of more like the motivational relationship guy. That tends to be the breakdown of staffs usually across the nation. So there's nothing unusual about that. But I know you talked to your guy Nevada Smith,
love him.
Frequent podcast gift guest. But yeah, he's kind of, you know, the offensive guru, really one of the sharpest basketball people you ever want to talk to. Really crazy opinions too, if you ever talk to him. He's always fun to talk to.
Stop. I can't just let that go by. I can't watch that pitch. You got to give me a little bit more crazy opinions. Now next time I get him on, I may not even do a sportscast with him.
when you get him on, he thinks every pass thrown should be a one-handed pass. Ask him about that.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. The coach that I used to coach under would, that was actually his pet peeve. Like someone would throw a one hand pass, he'd be out of the game. And then he goes, how many times in practice would we throw a one hand pass? Right. Like, it's like a coach's nightmare. I love to hear that he thinks about it differently.
Every pass he said should be one handed pass. So like, yeah, they'll never get mad at Tyler for, you know, throwing those hook passes across, you know, across the court.
He can make them though.
Yeah. So yeah, next time you have him on, ask him about that. That's one of his weird philosophical quirks that he likes.
I like that. All right, I'm gonna hit him up on that. Before we get out of here, I got one more question I want to talk about, because this is something that came up in the production team and something that we've talked about a little bit. And I don't know where I land on it yet. Some on our production team feel a little bit stronger about this than maybe some of the others, but we've had a small sample size so far of close game coaching from Shaka.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen him from the plays he draws up, and I feel like, well, I don't feel like, I know we've seen us lose more of those close games and what we've done in the last 2 minutes to the last 30 seconds and what's drawn up than we have won those games. You know, some of the guys think that this is a flaw in Shaka, that this is something that, you know, one of the, Dr. Keegan said exactly this, you know, one of the things that I was really afraid of, and he's out, that final game he had in Texas in the first round where they got bounced, he's like, he just looked like a deer in headlights and just didn't know what to do in the moment. Now I don't think that I have seen Shaka as a deer in headlights so far. Yeah. I wouldn't say that yet. But I haven't been overly impressed with the way that we've kind of managed some of those. Like I've seen some good things, like for example, but this is where Shaka is going to be really good, is on the defensive side, right? Mm-hmm. Providence had one of the last shots or their last possession in the first half coming out of a timeout, and it was a tie game and Shaka called a zone. Brilliant. Right.
Yeah,
take the pen right out of Cooley's hands, come out with the zone and completely mess up with whatever they were doing, and it worked. He's going to be good like that on defense, but when we have to score, I think it's a concern. Do you think that this is a flaw of his? Do you think that this is something that maybe he would even point to himself as something he has to be better at?
No, I think it's definitely something that he said he's looked into this stuff. They definitely go back and second guess their decisions. One thing after that Providence game that I really should have asked this, I forgot to after the game, just about calling timeout at the end of regulation when the market was struggling. I think when I watched the game on TV afterwards, I think especially, I got my notes here. I can't remember who the Providence player was, but they hit a three when they were coming back and they got it to two. I think that was one time where he probably should have called a timeout there. So I wish I would have asked him about that afterwards. That's on me. But I think that was an area where he grew up. But, you know, they've also gotten good looks, like, down the stretch of these close games, and they've just missed them. Like, think of the three-pointers they missed against Wisconsin. Like, Stevie had a good look against Providence, and Cam had that wide-open look in overtime against Providence. Those were all like process, really good process. Just like they just missed the shots. So,
well, and that's sort of my rebuke to the criticism that this is a flaw of his. My rebuke is that, like, I don't know that this offense is predicated on the idea of drawing up a play. Like, they just don't do a lot of sets. Like, you know, it's all read and react. And so if that's what your offense thrives on, then you have to maybe just make sure your timeouts that you're saying, hey, here's what they've been doing the last 10 possessions and how they're guarding us. Here's what could be open. Here's what we want you to keep your attention on, and then you got to trust your players. And so maybe this is more about the players being, you know, learning. Now, I don't want to say better, but learning, right? They're to learn how to manage that moment, because I've also seen a lot of hero ball out of this team at the end of games. You know what I mean? And I hate that when we get out of our offensive system and we get into that. And that's, you know, actually when I was looking at the breakdown on, I was looking at the analytics of just sort of our, like when we take shots in a shot clock, like from the 0 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30, like our best points per possession is between the 20 and 30 second mark. And I think that is because we are actually looking within our system, right?
Yeah. Working the ball around, driving against closeouts, passing out. Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, here's the crazy part about it. So from 0 to 10 seconds, we will shoot the ball 37% of the time. 10 to 20 seconds is 40%, and 20 to 30 seconds is only 18%. So there's a pretty big jump there. And when you look at our points per possession within 0 to 10 seconds, it's 1.22, which is the 77th percentile back. Comparison to when we're at 20 to 30 seconds, it's a 1.13. I know that's less than 1.22, but remember they're comparing in that block of time. And we're in the 94th percentile for during that time, which to me says a lot about this team's ability to be better at those times. And so the hero ball at the end, to kind of bring this all the way back to what we're talking about with Shaka, is sometimes that hero ball, and you know, those guys get hot and they start taking those shots, we get out of our system. And that's not what I think. I think that puts us at a deficit. So, you know, I think time will tell. I think, you know, it's good to hear from you. And I think we probably could have assumed that Shaq is the kind of guy who's thoughtful enough to sit back and say, I did this wrong. Like, he doesn't seem stubborn. He doesn't seem to have a giant ego. I mean, if you just look at who he was from VCU to Texas to here, like his willingness to evolve over all three of these programs and change who he is, I think, a big testament to him. Right. And so we'll have to see where that ends up later on this year. But Ben, I can't thank you enough for coming on. We're going to do this again. I kind of like the co-host. What'd you think? This wasn't bad.
Yeah, we're vibing, man. We're vibing back and forth. It's awesome.
Hey, tell the Sentinel maybe that we just need to make this a regular newspaper podcast. They'll take us out. We'll clean up the swearing, you know, if they need us to. But anyways, man, thank you so much. Have a great holiday with your family. We'll catch you in January.
You too, man. I appreciate you having me on. It's always fun.
Damn, that was a good time. Such a good dude. So good to have him on here. And listen, subscribe, please, to the Milwaukee Sentinel Journal. Don't be an idiot. Don't be lazy. It's important. It's not important just for basketball. It's important for the city of Milwaukee. It's important to have a good, strong local newspaper. Get your wallet books out. Get yourself a subscription. Buy one for your friends for Christmas. But support local. Thank you so much for listening. We are so lucky to do this show for the greatest fans in college basketball. We out.